Dubai Eye
103.8. Now, question for you. How does a girl from New Jersey end up in a remote Himalayan village, what, a decade ago? And then 10 years on, finds herself raising, it's still in that Himalayan village, raising 500 plus orphans. Well, the girl in question is Maggie Doyen, who's joining us live on The Agenda down here at Mazda ADSW. She founded the Blink Now Foundation, which helps the community in Sirkut, Nepal. She's here to tell her story, but also she has been nominated as one of the finalists for the very prestigious Zayed Sustainability Prize, an annual award that recognises and rewards achievements of those who are driving impactful change. And we will get more on that in just a few moments' time. But first and foremost, it's a warm welcome to Maggie. Hey, Maggie.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
All right.
It's been awesome. First time in Abu Dhabi, first time in the UAE. It's been a good trip.
Well, it's great to have you here. Thanks so much indeed for coming on to talk to us ahead of the announcement of the Zayed Sustainability Prize. I mean, let's start with that one. You know, we've just met a few moments ago, and the first thing you said to me is like, you know, don't talk about me too much. Talk about the team. Talk about those that contribute so much. Which immediately tells me that you're somebody who doesn't really sort of deal with the praise that much. But when it comes to a prize that recognises your efforts, such as the Zayed Sustainability Prize, what does this mean to you, being nominated?
It was incredible. We spent 5 years designing and building the greenest school in what we thought to be the world in South Asia, and it has a rainwater harvest tank and solar panels and wastewater system that is completely self-generating and a solar cooker. So to be here to celebrate all of that work and the work of our community and our schools it's rewarding. It was, for a lot of years, we just had our heads down designing and creating the school of the future that served the most vulnerable children in the world. So we're proud just to be here and celebrating such good sustainable work from around the world.
Now, when I was doing the handover from the Business Breakfast, the show that precedes us here on air, and I was having a chat with the presenter of that, Brandy Scott, and she was on the point of getting in the car to come down here for 12 o'clock to see you, to be part of this conversation that we're having. Such is the impact that you've had, not just on children in Nepal, but from so many people that watch on have watched this story. And I know it's a story that you've told probably 10,000 times, but for our listeners out there, explain that process. Explain how a young 20-something heads over to a remote Himalayan village and is still there to this day having an impact.
Yeah, I was just really young, and I honestly thought I was going to end up in college and, you know, having this, we're kind of driven in the U.S. to like, oh, I'll go out there and do something and get into the best school and get the best job. And at the very last moment, I just sort of questioned it. I'd never really left my little suburban town, and I thought, oh, I should really see what else is out there in the world. And long story short, I end up in 2005 on the border of the Nepali region, where a civil war had really ravaged the country and created an estimate 1 million orphan children. And I was walking over a dry riverbed, and I saw lots of children breaking rocks, and they were 3 years old and 5 years old and 8 years old, just breaking big pieces of rock into gravel to sell for about $1 a day. And it was on that riverbed, in that moment, where I was just like, I can't turn around, I can't go back, I have to do something. And we started by putting children into school, and it has since evolved into a program that's making sure that our world's children are educated, safe, and loved, especially in rural Nepal.
It is a story that, as I've mentioned, has been told a number of times. It is a story of inspiration for so many. So many significant points in that. But one turning point in your travels around Nepal that urged you to take action, you've just highlighted it a little, but let's just reflect on that a little more. Benjamin.
I met one particular girl. Her name was Hima. She was 7 years old, but every day when I walked to meet her, she'd just smile with these big bright eyes and she'd say, Namaste, Didi. And I thought for the first time, okay, Maggie, forget the 80 million. What if you just started with Hima? Is there something that you can do to change the life of just one child? And I thought at 18, and as the entrepreneurial mind that I have, okay, I can do that. What if I just supported the education of this one child? How would her life change? And this is Hima a couple weeks later. I put her into school and followed and tracked her progress. But the sad thing was that I didn't think it was enough. There were kids that didn't have homes and families, and they were orphans. And one day I had this idea. I found a piece of land, and it just happened to be $5,000.
Really interesting there. What, you know, the message that you brought there. What if I just change the life, the outcome of one individual? When you reflect, is that still the sort of fundamental of everything you do, despite the fact that there are now several hundred orphans that you're looking after?
That's exactly right. I think the problems get so overwhelming that we just put a wall up and are like, we can't solve it. It's just too big. It's too overwhelming. We'll never get there. So we might as well just care about ourselves and our families and the things we can control. And it breeds apathy. It breeds, you know, not being accountable. And so I went through that same process where I was just so overwhelmed. And I was like, our human family is in devastation and we can't possibly recover. And how do we have children starving still, despite all that we've done, and still on the side of riverbed breaking rocks all day? And then kind of bringing it back to one single step, one child, really helped center me and like, okay, it mattered for Hema and it matters for this kid. And from that, it really grew organically, slowly, step by step. And we've come so far 10 years later.
Talk to you about scale and the challenges of scale, because you impacted the life of Hema. You hope to change her life, as you have so many other children as well. But with this comes more attention, becomes more potential of funding, etc., more potential to scale as well, and the desire almost to do as much as you can for as many. Do you have to sort of temper that ambition to scale to make sure that every single individual child is getting the attention that they deserve?
That's exactly right. We draw a little circle around our small village and our small community, and we look at the children who really need the most support, who really are going to benefit from our programs, and then we go really deep. We don't look to up and move to a new village and a new location, a new country. We really think best quality we can for the children and the neediest, and change that cycle and turn them into change makers and the future, and end that trajectory of poverty and violence in a community. So everything that we do is open source and shareable in terms of our learning and our model and our curriculum, but we are just where we are in this little town in the foothills of Sirket.
Obviously the challenges with that, the challenges of the attention, the scale, etc., but what also the challenges, the question I'm going to ask you about, the school's been dubbed as Nepal's greenest school as well, which again is one of the fundamentals that you've held on to from the beginning. Has that become more challenging with time as well, to maintain those commitments to the climate and your green principles?
No, it's actually gotten easier. I mean, you set up the solar panels and you expand it little by little, and then, you know, sadly, there's not a lot of people that are really taking the step and seeing the urgency of our planet and the climate. And so we realized, like, we had to be a school of the future and we had to do this the right way. And I have to say, we learned it the hard way. You know, there was a blockade where the border was shut down and we couldn't get gas to cook our food. And there wouldn't be power for 16 hours a day. How do we run a school or a small industry without power? So we did it kind of out of necessity. And then in the process, as we tried to push the buttons and see how far we could go and how off the grid and how self-sustaining we could go, we realized that we'd really created something special and something that other people wanted to learn how to do. And that was really, really fun.
With the work that you've done and the impact you've had on orphans and also the 50 kids in their home Kapila Valley School as well, etc., what impact has that had? And you're seeing the fruits of your labor at the moment in terms of the community as a whole, because I'm assuming you're taking vulnerable children without much hope and then producing a completely different product a little later on that are contributing to the wider community?
Yeah, exactly. And they do it themselves. Like, they become the change. They need a little bit of investment, some hope, you know, their basic human needs and fundamental rights met. And now they're going off into college. They're starting successful businesses. They're getting into leading universities and really flipping the cycle. And it's so simple because it's safety, education, nourishment, love, family, care, but it's also what so many of our world's children are lacking that we haven't been able to provide, and it's so transformational, and I so believe in it in the core of my being that this is the future of a more peaceful world if we can care for our children.
I was talking to a fascinating guy at the end of last year, one of the Rohingya refugees, one of the few, the lucky few, who's been able to get an education as a result of the problems that he found himself in. And he was quite outspoken about the fact that, you know, he was not alone, but a lot of those that were in a similar position were going off to colleges in different parts of the world. That was it. They weren't coming back. It was like, thank you very much indeed. Now I've got my opportunity. I've gone. In what you're instilling in your children as well, I mean, are you seeing them come back to the community that needs their help?
We are. All of our students are really Nepal-centric, really patriotic, really proud of their country, and, you know, studying areas of issues that they can bring back and really improve. And I think Nepal is unique like that. I mean, there will always be a brain drain in this part of the world. There will always be migrant workforce leaving and going abroad. And remittances to this day are the number one source of income in Nepal. So it's a tricky issue and something that we need to instill in our kids as a culture and a value. And we've been successful so far in doing that and instilling a love and a pride in their country. I don't want the kids to grow up with the narrative that they live in a poor country or that they're underserved or with labels. I want them to be proud of Nepal and the Himalayas and all that it stands for. So we've really worked to instill that in our students, and it's working.
From the Abu Dhabi National Exhibition Center,
this is The Agenda.
Live at Abu Dhabi Sustainability Week, accelerating sustainable development.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
We are in conversation with one of the finalists for the Zayed Sustainability Prize this year. It is the inspirational Maggie Doyne, who took... It was your babysitting money, wasn't it? Wasn't that the initial investment?
That's right.
That was the crowdfunding first time round, wasn't it?
It was.
Took that, and since then, 10 years later and plus, have gone on to help literally hundreds of orphans and children over in Nepal. A country that I'm assuming is now very much home for you, both physically and emotionally.
It is. I love it there. It's beautiful people, beautiful landscape, lots of hope following the conflict and on its way to a stable government and really good positive development.
We've heard there about the story and the growth and the development that you've put in with the school, with the children, and Nepal's greenest school now being recognised by so many the world over. You've also set up this foundation, the Blink Now Foundation. Talk to us a bit more about that and explain the reasoning behind it.
The Blink Now Foundation is about changing the world in the blink of an eye, and it's inspiring all of us to do something, take a step forward, make a change, especially on behalf of children. And, you know, I always say if you're educated, safe, if you're free, if you have any kind of opportunity to give back, like, don't wait, let's get started. And we do that through our work at COPLA, and COPLA is our partner on the ground in Nepal, and it's a women's center, it's a school, it's a safe home for girls, a safe home for young children as well. Sustainability is really important in one of our core principles. So our approach is very whole child and looking at what a whole child and what a whole community needs to uplift and thrive and grow.
You've walked the walk, as it were, rather than just talked the talk. There will be a lot of people out there, listeners, especially those of a younger generation, or younger listeners out there saying, so inspired by what Maggie's done, but mum and dad are telling me that I've got to go and finish my schooling, I've got to go to university, I've got to get a job, I've got to get that and things like that, and then I can do good along the way. What is your advice to people these days? If people want to make a change, can they make a change?
Absolutely. I always say, use what you have, start with what you have in your hands. I think we wait, like, until you have the college education, the glitzy degree, and everything that's and it's just a waiting game to put off, you know, what's your true purpose is. And I think the greatest gift in life is to live a purpose-driven life and have something. So whatever you have, whether it's a voice or two hands or a cause, whether it's the bees or the whales or the trees, like, there's so many things to care about. So I just say, choose something that resonates with your heart and then make the world better.
You are making the world better through your efforts and the efforts of your teams and, of course, the children that you are helping and have been helping for so long now. That's been recognised by the Zayed Sustainability Prize. You have been nominated as one of this year's finalists. What next? I mean, when do we know what? Where are we at? When is that announced?
So it was just announced. I just ran over here to meet you. There were winners from across the globe. got beat out in the final round by another school from Nepal called the Bloom School, who we also really love and know really well. So it was a tough loss, but we're really proud that it's, you know, the award and prize will still be going into a country that we love and care about. But it was so inspiring in there. Like, there was the category of water and the category of energy and the category of, you know, all these environmental issues. And then they chose from thousands of projects around the world working towards sustainability initiatives. And the energy in the room was just on fire, and people were crying and standing up and cheering when they won. And it was just so magical to be in there. I think Abu Dhabi goes big for this award ceremony. There was, you know, presidents and head of state and the crown prince, and it was definitely something to just drop your chin in awe at the whole presentation and the screens, and it was really good energy in there.
Well, commiserations for missing out, but congratulations on being recognized on what was a very significant shortlist. And I suppose the silver lining to that cloud is you get a couple more days to enjoy Abu Dhabi, see all that it's got to offer.
Exactly. There's a lot of youth panels and discussions happening and really good events, so we're going to definitely enjoy it and see the sights.
Maggie, enjoy your time down here in the city and also down here at the event itself. If people want to find out more about the work that you do, about the foundation, what's the best way for them to do that?
Oh, we are all over social media. Instagram, Facebook. We're called the Blink Now Foundation, blinknow.org. Thank you.
Maggie Doyne, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much indeed for being with us here today. And welcome again to Abu Dhabi. Thanks for everything.
Thanks for having me.
To conclude, we'd like to just play out a clip of Maggie talking about making a difference. She's made a difference to our day. It's a powerful feeling.
The world will change when our children and our women are educated. They have less children. They raise better families. They raise more educated children. Their disease, everything decreases. Poverty levels, communities and villages change. And the thing about this work that I do is that it's very addicting. So I thought, okay, one kid, if I could do one, why not 10? What if my dream was to walk across this dry riverbed one day and not see a single child breaking stone? That's what I want. I want to create a world that I want to see every day. And I think we have the power to do that. I don't think you have to go 8,000 miles away to the foothills of the Himalayas. I think the beauty of all of us is that we have talents and we have gifts. And this just happened to be mine, and I'm really lucky to have found it and created my little slice of heaven, my little paradise. And I think that the world will change when we all find that for ourselves, where we wake up every day and we wouldn't rather be anywhere else in the world doing any other kind of work.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.